It's 1933. It's the Depression. The farm is barely surviving. If it weren't for the milk business, it would not have survived this long. Yet the profit margin is so slim that it's questionable whether either the milk business or the farm will be able to make it. W.J. is writing letters to Neil Bosworth in Elgin, a banker, and his cousin-in-law, about procedures for declaring bankruptcy. It's evening. The milk house has been a man short all day. Work is running behind. The butter is not yet made for tomorrow's delivery. Daddy goes out after supper to make it. He's alone in the milk house. He fetches the cans of pasteurized sweet cream from the cooler, opens the churn, pours the liquid in, seals the hatch. The churn is shaped like an oversized barrel on its side. He throws the switch, the churn rotates. Inside, the cream sloshes rhythmically. All the butter-making equipment and containers have been previously cleaned, but Daddy now runs the steam hose into a vat of water till the water is boiling, and sterilizes the large stainless steel pan, the wooden butter paddles, the 2-pound crockery butter tubs. He sterilizes the enamel-topped table with the boiling water and arranges the tubs upside down along the back of it, pyramid fashion. He listens for the change in sound that heralds the coming of the butter. He knows the sound from years of churning by hand as a boy in the kitchen of the big house. It wasn't a job he enjoyed. Then he fell not only by the change in sound, but by the change in feel. After a while, he hears that the butter's come. He stops churn, lifts out chunk after chunk of the golden butter, floating in the buttermilk. He drops them in the pan. When he has all the lumps, he slaps them together with the paddles into a huge ball. He rinses the ball in cold water, works it more, rinses it again, salts it lightly, works the salt into the butter. He sets the mound of butter on the table. Then he fills the tubs one by one, pressing the butter down so there are no air pockets, and smoothing the top of the butter flush with the crockery rim. Over every tub he lays a circle of sterile parchment paper. He then wipes off the tubs, carries them to the cooler, and stacks them, again in a pyramid, on the shelf beside the cottage cheese. They're ready for the morning. He returns to the churn with a clean milk can and starts emptying the buttermilk into it. Several quarts will be bottled before dawn for the few people on the routes who swear by fresh buttermilk. The rest will go down the lane to the pigs. As the buttermilk pours out, he sees a dark lump flow by and hears it splash into the can. He stops pouring, takes a dipper, and grapples in the can till he secures the lump. He pulls it out. There in the dipper, lying in a pool of buttermilk, is a sodden, drowned mouse. Daddy stares at it. He feels sick. He can't believe it. He stares at it some more. He feels sicker. He nudges it with his finger. The mouse turns a bit in the pale liquid. It is intact. Its little legs and tail are all there. Its eyes are half closed. Its teeth show slightly. Daddy thinks he might vomit. He takes the mouse over to the boiler, opens the furnace door, and throws it in. He returns to the churn, finishes emptying the buttermilk, caps the can, and wheels it into the cooler. He stands looking at the neat row of butter tubs. He says a single French word, "Merde." He returns to the churn, muttering, "Merde, merde," moving like a zombie. He rinses the churn, scrubs it with a stiff, bristled brush. He rinses it again, puts in hot water and a caustic solution, then starts the machinery and the sloshing churn rotates for the prescribed number of minutes. He rinses out the solution, refills the churn with clean water, adds the steam hose until the water is scalding, rotates the churn some more, then empties the rinse water. He turns the churn upside down to drain, cool, and dry. He walks back into the cooler and looks at the butter tubs. He bites the skin on the side of his thumb. His mind is numb. He finds himself counting the tubs over and over. He knows what he should do. He thinks of the cost of the cream, the price the butter will bring. He feels sick. He knows what he must do. He knows what he must do, but he doesn't do it. He walks past the lilac bushes to the little house, speaks words to mother that he himself doesn't hear, reads a story in the Saturday Evening Post whose words he doesn't see, and goes to bed. He has nightmares. He wakes up with the rattle and bang of the milk trucks loading. He hears the murmur of the milkmen's voices. Beside him, mother's breath is quiet and even. His stomach is knotted. He knows what he should do. It is still not too late. He knows what his father would do. He lies staring at the dark ceiling.